Attorney General Eric Holder is reviewing how capital punishment is applied in the United States. The review ordered by President Obama follows last week's execution in Oklahoma, in which a prisoner writhed on the gurney for nearly 45 minutes after the lethal drugs were administered. We'll ask our two guests from opposing perspectives whether it is time to abolish the death penalty in today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, May 7th. Did that botched execution make you think twice about the death penalty? Or doesn't it matter if a convicted murderer suffers when executed? What about the other disparities that President Obama cited when ordering the review of capital punishment policies and practices? He said, "In the application of the death penalty in this country, we have seen significant problems. Racial bias, uneven application of the death penalty, situations in which there were individuals on death row who later on were discovered to have been innocent because of exculpatory evidence." And President Obama went on to say, "All of these, I think, raise significant questions about how the death penalty is being applied." What do you think? We will discuss this issue, and we will welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We also have our big question online. You can find it on Facebook or at wpr.org/joy. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us John McAdams, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. He testified before a U.S. Senate subcommittee in 2008, or is that six, as an expert on capital punishment. He also runs the Marquette Warrior blog. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Rob Warden, Executive Director and Co-Founder of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at the Northwestern University School of Law. He's also a member of the Chicago Journalism Hall of Fame. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with you, Rob. First, your reaction to that botched execution in Oklahoma last week.
Oh, well, it was clearly macabre. Clayton Lockett was the 111th execution under the current law in Oklahoma. And it's not the first botched execution in Oklahoma, and certainly not the first botched execution in America. The as is well known at this point, Mr. Lockett, who is not a sympathetic character. I mean, he raped and buried his victim alive, so it's pretty hard to generate a great deal of public sympathy for him. But still, his execution was one of the most ghastly in the history of the nation. You know, he convulsed and twitched violently for 43 minutes before he finally died. It was just an incredible scene, and I think it's causing a great deal of public consternation nationally over the death penalty.
And John McAdams, your reaction to this?
A couple of things. A lot of the problems with the lethal injection are caused, and this case is a little more complicated because he had a collapsed vein, apparently, are caused by death penalty opponents that have caused European drug companies to cease selling the best drugs for lethal injection to American states. Now, note the irony there. Death penalty opponents are impeding the death penalty, making it difficult to do it properly. And then when something misfires or something goes awry, they say, see how bad the death penalty is. But they're simply invoking the havoc that they caused in order to oppose the death penalty. There's no execution method that is 100%. There's no public policy that's 100%. For example, President Obama has ordered a lot of drone strikes on terrorists. Most Americans doubtless approve of that, even if Rand Paul doesn't. But every so often, when you try to kill a terrorist, you kill somebody else, maybe wives or children who are hanging out with a terrorist, maybe you wipe out an innocent wedding party. That's a shame, but it's typical of public policies that they don't always work perfectly. What states need to do and have done, although, again, death penalty opponents have made life difficult, is to pursue policies designed to kill the convicted murderer without any unnecessary suffering. That's what the policy should aim at. There is never any guarantee that it's going to work work perfectly.
Yeah, let me get first, Rob, your reaction to the death penalty opponents actually leading to the lethal injection drugs maybe not being as effective.
Well, you know, as you know, probably know, here in Illinois, we've had 20 people who were exonerated and released after having been sentenced to death. That is an error rate in the threshold determination in capital cases, that is guilt or innocence, in excess of 6%. Under the Illinois law that was in effect until March of 2011, when we abolished capital punishment here, there were 303 people sentenced to death, men and women, five of the latter. And as I said, 20 of those, by the time we finally abolished capital punishment, had been exonerated. Now, in any earlier time, many of those people probably would have been executed because the wrongful convictions simply would not have been discovered. Now, since the founding of the Republic back in 1608 at Jamestown, there have been approximately 16,000 executions in the country. And estimates are that anywhere from 2% to 5% of those may have been innocent. So we've probably executed somewhere between 300 and 800 innocent men, and without the opposition that opponents of the death penalty have been able to bring to bear in recent years, we would still be killing people indiscriminately. I think that's an inordinately high price to pay for a punishment that accomplishes absolutely nothing.
He says it accomplishes absolutely nothing. Hopefully we'll get around later to talking about the social science evidence. There are a lot of very good studies.
Oh, you know that that's been totally discredited, Mr. McAdams.
No, they have not been.
All right, Mr. Warden, let John McAdams respond to this, and then we'll have you follow up.
Right. Okay.
The claims that this or that person is innocent are often bogus. I don't know about the Illinois cases. I know about the Death Penalty Information Center, Richard Dieter's operation, and they always publish a list of supposed innocents on death row who've gotten off. I looked at the list in 2006, and it had 123 people on it. I analyzed it in the Connecticut Law Review in 2001 and found out that a very large proportion, something approaching a majority, of those people got off on procedural grounds. That is to say, some appeals court judge ruled that there had been some procedural problem, or maybe inflammatory evidence had been admitted at trial, et cetera, and the conviction was overturned. When you look at the question of whether the people are actually innocent, pretty much a clear majority of the people listed by the Death Penalty Information Center as having been exonerated are probably almost certainly committed the crime. By the way, when I testified before Congress, Congressional Committee, I told them that they went to Richard Dieter, and Dieter essentially admitted that what I said was true.
Yeah, all right.
Not people known to be innocent, but people who got off.
All right, Rob Warden.
Well, we have a definition of exoneration, and that is that the person was restored to the status of actual innocence based on exculpatory information that was not presented at his or her trial. Now, that's not a perfect proxy for actual innocence, but it's pretty good, and it's an objective definition. That is different than the definition that Richard Dieter was using. Indeed, some of the cases listed on the Death Penalty Information Center website are cases in which people were had their convictions overturned on procedural grounds and were not, for some reason or another, re-prosecuted. I think that our definition is a pretty good proxy for actual innocence, and we have 20 people in the state of Illinois, as I said, who meet that definition. I think that the evidence is pretty overwhelming that we have exonerated a lot of innocent people.
Rob Worden is executive director and co-founder of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at the Northwestern University School of Law. John McAdams is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, who has testified before Congress as an expert on capital punishment. We are talking about today's big question, and that question is it time to end the death penalty? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, May 7th. We are talking with two guests from opposing perspectives about today's big question. Is it time to abolish the death penalty in the wake of the botched execution in Oklahoma last week? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, we have many callers, so let me go to the phones. Don in Waukesha is with us. Hello, Don.
Hi, Joy. Hey, just two quick things. As I understand, and like feedback on this, the cost involved with the whole death penalty process, including death row and the 12 or 13 years, that it's more expensive than having that convicted murderer or whatever spend a lifetime in jail. And then also, too, that, for anyone that's read Crime and Punishment, I mean, can it be asserted that, even 20 years in prison or a lifetime in prison is far more punishing, from a justice standpoint, not a vengeance standpoint, is far more punishing than giving that murderer the easy out of a death penalty?
Thank you very much for that. Those questions, Don. Let's have John McAdams respond first.
Sure. As it exists now, yes, the death penalty is more expensive, although it depends on what level of imprisonment the person would face. If it's supermax, that's rather expensive, and it might be cheaper to execute people. But the reason it's so expensive to execute people is, again, death penalty opponents who impede the process. And I just looked at the Federal Justice Department's capital punishment 2011, and it's now over 15 years on average before someone who has been convicted is executed. And that's not 15 years of reinvestigation and judicial scrutiny. That's mostly the person waiting around on death row while this or that federal judge takes months or years to actually look at an appeal. So we, in fact, ought to execute people much more quickly. Yes, there should be an appeal to the highest state court, and in a lot of states, an appeal goes immediately to the state Supreme Court, the highest federal court that will listen to the appeal, which of course typically isn't the Supreme Court, and the conviction should be reviewed on the basis of the law and the basis of the facts. That is to say, somebody, maybe judges or maybe a professionalized pardons and parole board, should scrutinize the facts and might decide the jury was wrong.
Before we get to the punishment question, I'm sorry, just because we had two questions there, let's get a response to that from Rob Worden on the cost of the death penalty and I guess how Professor McAdams is suggesting we lower the cost of it.
Well, the cost figures are kind of hard to come by because the estimates are really hard to make. But in the state of Illinois, for instance, in the year 2000, that's after we had I think, 10 death row exonerations, the Illinois legislature established something called the Capital Litigation Trust Fund to provide funding for investigations into mitigation and aggravation and potential capital cases. From that time until we abolished the death penalty in 2011, that fund expended more than $160 million and that was a period during which we a total of 15 people were sentenced to death. Now, that's pretty ludicrous. I mean, who could possibly favor a system like that? I suppose Mr. McAdams would just say, well, let's just, you know, execute them quickly. But if we do, we're going to risk more executions of potentially innocent people. So it's a trade-off. If we speed up the system, the more we speed it up, the greater the risk of executing somebody who's innocent. And I think we can all agree that it is not good public policy to execute innocent people.
Yeah. Well,
most of that 15 years is not due process. It's not investigation. It's not assuring justice. It's just delay.
Yeah. Well, let me have Rob Warden bring it back on our caller's second point that. I think saying that life in prison without parole might be a far worse punishment and mm-hmm. or just punishment. What do you say about that?
Well,
Rob?
That may well be true. I think anybody who has ever walked into a prison, in fact, the first time I ever visited one, it was the federal penitentiary in Marion, Illinois, and I remember just thinking when I walked through the corridors, oh my God, I'd rather be dead than be here. And it was clinically clean, and the food was good, and all of that. But it's just a horrible prospect to face a long period of time in prison. Now, I think a lot of people have that same response initially when they go into prisons. But if you you see that you quickly change your mind, because life is so precious that we will cling to it at almost any cost, and very few people. Everybody who's sentenced to death, by the way, has an option of abandoning their discretionary appeals, which is after the review of the highest court in the state, one review. They could all just commit suicide, state-abetted suicide at that point, and hardly any do. It does happen on occasion, but very rarely. So the people who are most affected by this, and those are the people who are sentenced to death, want to cling to life and go to take advantage of every bit of law and technicality that they can avail themselves to in order to avoid execution.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that makes it so costly.
And Professor McAdams, why isn't life in prison without parole for murderers good enough?
First of all, there's no guarantee it would be for life. Every so often, remember, politics can intervene. In the 1990s, Bill Clinton let a bunch of Puerto Rican terrorists out of prison. In the early 1990s, the governor of Ohio let a bunch of murderers out who were women who claimed that they were victims of a battered woman syndrome. For example, in one case, a woman had arranged for the killing of a guy who she'd been married to, I think married, and he battered her, but she'd left him a long time ago, and she hired a contract killer. So given the nature of politics, there's no guarantee that anyone is going to be in prison really for life. But I think Rob has, in effect, conceded that, yeah, death is a more severe punishment than a long prison sentence or even life in prison.
Dale on Facebook writes, capital punishment is about revenge. Therefore, it is not done for moral reasons. It has never worked as a deterrent to prevent other murders. Therefore, it has no intellectual value. So, John McAdams, are there moral and intellectual reasons to maintain the death penalty? And if so, what are they?
He says it's revenge. For most Americans, it would be considered justice. Remember, the Eric Holder Justice Department is asking for the death penalty for the Boston Marathon bomber. Barack Obama ordered the assassination of Osama bin Laden. And then you had Tim McVeigh, a terrorist who killed, 160-something people in Oklahoma City. That's just revenge. It's not moral to believe that punishment should be imposed on these people. The person who emailed certainly is on the other side of that issue than, say, Immanuel Kant or John Stuart Mill, who are, I think, more heavy-duty philosophers than the guy who's emailing you.
Rob Warden, a response to that about John McAdams says it's justice.
I doubt if either Kant or John Stuart Mill had an appreciation for the prospect of executing innocent people that we have today. As you know, they died long, long ago. And we believed, even I believed, that capital punishment was being applied only to guilty people until, you know, fairly recently when we discovered how bad it was, fairly late in the 20th century. I think it's quite clear, though, that it does not cause, that there is no deterrent effect. Wisconsin, by the way, abolished the death penalty 151 years ago. And it did so after a botched execution in Kenosha County. I mean, 3,000 people witnessed it. It was a hanging of a farmer named John McCaffrey who had drowned his wife in a barrel. The evidence of his guilt was pretty overwhelming, but the people of Wisconsin were so revulsed by the macabre spectacle of that execution that they abolished the death penalty 2 years later, becoming the first jurisdiction in the United States, by the way, to abolish the death penalty for all crimes. I think that that was a great decision by the people of Wisconsin, and fortunately Wisconsin has had only one execution in its entire history. If the economic research to which Mr. McAdams obliquely referred at the beginning were accurate, Wisconsin would have a much higher crime rate than, say, Illinois, or, say, Texas, or Oklahoma, or Virginia, which practice the death penalty. And, in fact, Wisconsin has a much lower crime rate than any of those states.
We have to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with our big question guests about whether or not we should abolish the death penalty. Rob Warden says, yes, we should. Executive director of and co-founder of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law. John McAdams says we should not. He is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. This is the Ideas Network. President Obama has ordered a review of how capital punishment is applied in the United States. Following last week's botched execution in Oklahoma, in which a prisoner writhed on a gurney for nearly 45 minutes after the lethal drugs were administered. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Wednesday, May 7th. And in today's big question, we are asking, is it time to abolish the death penalty? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have two guests from opposing perspectives. John McAdams, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, who testified before a U.S. Senate subcommittee in 2006 as an expert on capital punishment. He also runs the Marquette Warrior blog. And Rob Warden is the executive director and co-founder of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law. He is also a member of the Chicago Journalism Hall of Fame. All right, let's move on to our next caller, Jim in Fontana. Hello, Jim.
Hello. I have two points. One is kind of a question that I believe is begged by this kind of a discussion. And secondly, since one of the commentators mentioned the Oklahoma City bombing, I have a comment about that. First of all, just what is it about our history of jurisprudence that comes from Europe, that comes from English common law and so forth, that we have suddenly just, or not suddenly, but we ignore somehow the rest of the civilized world does not do this? What's so unique about the American experiment that somehow we are we smarter than virtually everyone else in the world? Is there something terribly awful or more violent about us that we have to have these kind of draconian punishments?
Jim, I know you want to make an additional comment, but we have very limited time, and that's a big one. Why is the John McAdams, why is the U.S. the only country in the civilized world that still has the death penalty?
Well, I mean, if he's looking at Europe, is Europe more civilized than we are, or are they simply more decadent? Interestingly, as even the New Republic admitted a few years ago in an article titled Death in Venice, elites imposed the abolition of the death penalty on Europe, where in a lot of countries, ordinary people favor the death penalty. And even in countries like France and Italy, where majorities oppose the death penalty now, They favored the death penalty when the death penalty was abolished. We are a more populist, more democratic nation. By the way, we also have stronger notions of individual rights. Free speech, rights of free speech are much stronger here than in Europe. In a lot of countries in Europe, you can be locked up, literally put in prison for denying the Holocaust. Here, that's protected free speech. So we're different in a lot of ways. The notion that Europe is somehow superior to us, those people aren't even reproducing themselves. Fertility is well below replacement in Europe. It's a declining civilization, and there's no moral standard for us.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk about deterrence, Joy?
Well,
Rob got to talk about it.
And let me get him to just to comment on the caller's point, and then we can talk about deterrence.
I certainly can't disagree with the points Mr. McAdams just made. Europe has mostly got a parliamentary forms of government that are indeed less responsive to public opinion than we are in the United States. But public opinion is steadily eroding in favor of the death penalty in this country as well. In fact, some polls indicate that fewer than half favor it when presented with the alternative of life without parole. And the United States Supreme Court has already abolished the death penalty for juveniles and the mentally retarded on the grounds that those executions violate contemporary evolving standards of decency. I think it's probably only a matter of time until that same logic will be applied to the death penalty in general. The death penalty has been abolished in 5 states that reinstated it after a temporary hiatus as a result of the Supreme Court decision in 1972 in Furman versus Georgia. And public opinion does change, and things that were once acceptable are no longer acceptable. And the public in Europe today it generally endorses the concept that its politicians grasped earlier while there were still majorities favoring it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Professor McAdams, we did hear from Rob Warden about Wisconsin's history with the death penalty and how after a bungled execution hundreds of years ago that we banned.
Oh, just 151 years ago. 153 years
ago.
Well,
interestingly, in 2006, there was a referendum in Wisconsin on the death penalty, and the death penalty won 55 to 45. But on the issue of deterrence, what Rob is engaged in is what we social scientists call barefoot empiricism. He wants to compare with Wisconsin to Illinois or Texas. All states are different in all kinds of ways in terms of their demographics, in terms of their political culture. So what you need to do is to control for all of those things. And there are a lot of studies, probably like 15 or 20 now, published in peer-reviewed scholarly journals, mostly in economics, mostly having come out since 2000, showing a deterrent effect of the death penalty. Now, there are studies on the other side, I'll clearly have to admit. So I think the question is, upon whom does the burden of proof rest? I would say that unless you can prove that the death penalty doesn't deter, then by not imposing it, you're risking innocent lives. That is to say, suppose we execute guilty murderers and find out that the death penalty doesn't deter. Well, we've killed a bunch of guilty murderers, and by the way, not just ordinary garden-variety murders. You have to be talking about something like the guy in Oklahoma. Just killing a woman won't do. You have to rape her and then kill her. So that's what we risk on one side. On the other side, by failing to execute, we risk allowing innocent people to be killed. I would much rather risk the former than the latter.
Rob Warden?
Well, obviously, I disagree with all of that. I would say that unless you can show a deterrent effect, that there's no rational reason for favoring the death penalty. It's costly. It definitely runs a risk of executing innocent people. And it is being applied in a racially discriminatory manner and otherwise arbitrary, capricious, and wanton and freakish ways. So I think it's really unjustified in any sense. Now, I understand why people, you look at the horrible nature of some of these crimes And you would think that this just cries out for the worst punishment we can possibly provide. And that's certainly true of the crime Mr. Lockhart quite clearly committed in Oklahoma. But we just have this visceral reaction to we've got to kill that person. And that doesn't really make a lot of sense. We should step back and we should take a more reasoned look at it. And I think all you have to do, and I've been on death rows in this country, in Illinois, I should say, and it doesn't take very long to determine that the people you encounter there are not the sort to engage in an elaborate cost-benefit analysis before they decide whether or not they're going to commit a murder. And the economic studies to which Mr. McAdams refers all basically take into account that people are making rational decisions when they commit these kinds of crimes. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not premeditated. It just means that they may be that they're often irrational, and we are imposing the death penalty in such a tiny number of cases that if you really did engage in a cost-benefit analysis before you decided to commit a crime, you'd conclude that that the probability of ever being executed for it is so small that you don't really need to be concerned about it.
Let's take a caller from Pigeon Falls. Doug. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hello. I would just want to know why they would call this a botched execution in Oklahoma when the execution was successful. He died. I mean, the thing is, look at what he did. I mean, he shot somebody, buried him alive, and his other two victims hit him in the face with a shotgun. Why are we concerned about a humane death for convicted killers? I don't understand it.
Well, Doug,
I'll take your comment.
All right, so Doug, doesn't seem to matter that many believe this inmate suffered when he writhed on the gurney for 45 minutes when the lethal injection drugs were not apparently administered properly. Rob, how do you react to people who don't seem to be bothered that, you know, this guy died?
The national consensus appears to have long been that executions should be conducted in a humane manner. That's why we've gone from, you know, firing squads to hangings, to the gas chamber, to the electric chair, and then finally to lethal injection. That is basically just human nature for some reason, that we don't want to watch these macabre scenes and we don't want to know about them. I think that there are many more compelling reasons to abolish the death penalty, and those are the risk of executing an innocent person, and we quite clearly have done that in a number of cases, even in recent years. And secondly, the cost factor. If it achieves no deterrent effect, or if you can't show a clear deterrent effect, then it simply there's no rational reason to preserve it.
Yeah. A Republican lawmaker from Oklahoma said that as a father and a former lawman, he doesn't care if it's by lethal injection, electric chair, firing squad, or being fed to the lions. John McAdams, does there need to be more of an effort to ensure that executions are done as humanely as possible?
Well, I wouldn't say more of an effort because I think states are making an effort. Again, they're being impeded by European drug companies that won't give them the proper drugs. Frankly, I think a firing squad or a hanging are perfectly fine methods of execution. I think we went wrong about a century ago trying to get high tech and instituting electrocution and the gas chamber. Both firing squads and hangings, again, if competently executed, meet the standard of not being cruel and unusual, and probably maybe botched less often than lethal injection. As for the caller's point, my heart doesn't terribly bleed because the guy suffered, but I do think the constitutional requirement is not that people never suffer, but that the state design a system intended not to cause suffering. That is, to put the person to death fairly quickly without any gratuitous or unnecessary suffering But again, it's unreasonable to expect that any policy works perfectly. Again, let's go back to Obama's drone strikes that occasionally kill innocent people. That's a shame. We'd prefer that we could kill only terrorists, but all policies can misfire. All policies can sometimes be botched.
President Obama called the execution deeply disturbing, and while he still backs the death penalty, he says we need to ask ourselves some difficult and profound questions about its use. John McAdams, what, if any, questions do you think need to be raised?
That's a difficult question for me because I'm perfectly happy with the death penalty. Can I address something that somebody earlier brought up, I think Rob brought up, which is racial disparity.
Sure.
It exists, but it's not what people think. A lot of people's minds are still back in To Kill a Mockingbird. The racial disparity is that people who kill black victims are less likely to get a death sentence than people who kill whites. Now, it's important to understand that overwhelmingly blacks are murdered by other black people, just as whites are overwhelmingly murdered by other white people. Now, what is the reason for this? You could say, aha, it's a racist criminal justice system that values black lives less than white lives. In fact, there's an interesting article by Theodore Eisenberg in the Cornell Law Review, 2004-2005, that shows that the whole problem is geographic. Murders of black people, mostly done by other black people, are concentrated in the inner cities of metropolitan statistical areas. In those places, you have two things going on. Number one, you have swamping. That is to say, the crime level is high. DAs have somewhat limited resources. A lot of resources are required to get a death sentence, and therefore DAs are less likely to seek it. Number two, black juries, common in those places, are a bit less likely to seek impose a death penalty than juries in other places. And, of course, prosecutors would react to this by not asking for the death penalty. Remember, Marsha Clark didn't ask for the death penalty for O.J. Simpson. So if you put those two things together, you get a racial disparity. And it's geographic. It's simply a matter of where did the murders occur, and black victims, like black offenders, happen to be in those places where a death sentence is less likely.
Well, Rob Warden, comments on the racial disparity argument.
If you look at just say Cook County, Illinois, which is where Chicago is, about 6% of murder victims here in an average year are Caucasian, and yet during the period of time that we had the death penalty, death sentences were imposed. Caucasian victims accounted for 36% of the victims in cases in which the death penalty was imposed. I think that's just a huge disparity, and it does it clearly indicates that there is there's a racial factor. Now, that's not to say that the police involved in the investigation, the prosecutors or the judges or the jurors, are racist. It's just that's the product of the way the system works. The outcome is racist regardless of anybody's intent.
Yeah, and very briefly, as we have to conclude here, how do you feel, Rob, about President Obama's review and his comments?
I think that his comments are entirely appropriate. That it is time that we review this very carefully. There are thousands of people on death row throughout the United States. We're wasting untold millions, if not billions, of dollars on appeals that would be foregone if the death penalty were not on the table in these cases. We simply have better things, better ways to spend our money in this day and age, and it is also, the death penalty is just, it's something out of the 15th century that we should have gotten rid of long, long ago.
And we're going to leave it there for now. Thank you both very much for being with us. Lots to think about as we ponder today's big question. Is it time to abolish the death penalty? We will allow you to sound off on our big question in just a moment at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Time now for you to sound off on today's big question. should the death penalty be abolished? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Jocelyn in Sheboygan first. Good morning. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that when we eliminate corruption on both sides, you know, money buys innocence and you have corrupt prosecutors, as in the case of Reuben Hurricane Carter that just recently died and was hounded and persecuted by a corrupt prosecutor, and he was in jail for 20 years and he was an innocent man. Things like that, it's just too easy to execute someone that is innocent.
Thank you very much for your call. 30 seconds so we can fit in as many of you as possible. Joe in Menasha, what do you think?
I'm for it. Usually death penalties are because of the most heinous crimes. I can't think of any other way to avenge the victim than that, when it's that heinous. So that's my opinion.
Thanks very much for it. Dee in Beloit, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm completely against it. I do think it's very barbaric. I find it really amazing. I think this is mostly very right-wing thought. If you look, it's a lot of the Republican states that sort of propose this. I feel like the Americans like to talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. You know, there's this Christianity, there's morality. There's a lot that they try to throw at and talk about the Americans being the most humane nation. But our you know, record shows otherwise.
And we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Dee. Nathan on Facebook writes, it's ignorant to claim that the death penalty is ineffective. First of all, justice is not speedily executed to the degree that criminals who are clearly guilty can and do spend years bouncing around the courts before receiving their sentence. Secondly, actions have consequences, and just because you're sorry doesn't mean you are exempt from penalty. It is natural to regret wrong actions when faced with consequences of those actions, but the crime already has been committed and justice must be paid. Next, we will go to Mary in Appleton. Hi, Mary. What do you think?
Hi. I'm totally against it. I think you put everything aside, what you think, and just think of this statement, a song written by Holly Meir, Foolish Notion. Why do we kill people just to show killing people is wrong? Put everything aside and think about that statement for one minute. You're not teaching anyone anything. We're not accomplishing anything. It's barbaric. It should be done away with.
Thank you very much, Mary. And Scott in Friendship is with us. Hello, Scott.
Hi. I am in favor of the death penalty, and I would like to add one little caveat that I think we should consider using these people that we execute as organ donors. That way the penalty would fit perfectly the crime because if they have taken a life, now here's an opportunity to restore somebody's life. Unfortunately, it's not the same person.
All right. Thank you very much. That'll do it for our on-air sound-off portion of today's big question, asking, following the recently bungled execution of an inmate in Oklahoma, is it time to abolish the death penalty? And we have so far online 76% of you saying, yes, the death penalty should be abolished, and 19% of you saying, no, it should not be abolished. You can continue voting online. You'll find that poll on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's also at WPR.org/joy. Thanks very much for producer Bill Martins, on-air producer Robin Cherry, our on-air director Cynthia Schuster. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. As I mentioned, we will be talking with attorney and activist and author Ralph Nader coming up in our next hour, talking about his new book, Unstoppable, the emerging left-right alliance to dismantle the corporate state. Do the left and the right really have some common ground? We'll talk about it coming up after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.